Would you turn, please, to the Gospel according to Mark? Mark chapter 8, I would like to read some verses from Mark chapter 8, starting at verse 1. In those days, the multitude being very great, and have nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him, and said unto them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now been with me 3 days, and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own houses, they will faint by the way. For divers of them came from a distance, came from afar. And his disciples answered him, From whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and gave thanks, and brake, and gave his disciples to set before them. And they did set them before the people. And they had a few small fish, and he blessed and commanded to set them also before them. So they did eat, and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets. And they that had eaten was about 4,000. And he sent them away. Would you go down to verse 22, please? And he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes, and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw it. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. After that he put his hands again upon his eyes, and made him look up. And he was restored, and he saw every man clearly. And he sent them away to his house, saying, Neither go into the town, nor tell it to any in the town. Would you go down to the very end of the chapter, please? Verse 34, I think, is the verse. And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now, I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of his word, public reading of his word. He always does. I thought it would be of interest today to look at the chapter and find visions of Christ, and at the same time see in the disciples and others reflection of our own hearts. So we would have a ministry of Christ and a practical touch all at the one time in a very short space of time. For those that like a division of the chapter, I'm going to take time to do that. You may be able to look at it yourself, you see. Ministry meetings don't end at the end of a meeting. Ministry meetings is that which promotes an interest. God doesn't put, it's true he opens his hand and supplies the need of every living thing, but he doesn't put the thing in the bird's nest, you know, but to go and get it. And you'll have to beat out the thing for yourself. And I'll give younger folk the vision of the chapter, and they can follow it out, I'm sure. We have the feeding of the 5,000 from verses 1 to 10. We have the Pharisees seeking a sign from verses 11 to 13. We have the warning against leaven from verses 14 to 21. We have the curing of the blind man in verses 22 to 26. From verses 27 to 30, we have the Lord questioning the disciples and that memorable declaration of Peter, Thou art the Christ. From verses 31 to 33, we have the Lord's intimation of his own rejection. And the man he commended, he condemns. Now, we'll see the wisdom in outlining the chapter. And immediately after the announcement of his rejection, we have the call and cost of discipleship. Now, I'm continually telling myself as I read Mark's Gospel that Mark writes it as it happened. If you want the moral side, you'll go to Luke. If you want the dispensational side, you'll go to Matthew. But if you want the historical record, things as they happen, then Mark records that. And I find that almost breathtaking when I look at a chapter like this. Immediately after Peter gives word to perhaps one of the most clear and glorious statements regarding Christ, immediately after getting commended for that, immediately after that, the same mouth that commended had to condemn him, because out of Peter's mouth came something that was really the language that Satan took there. And immediately after he announces his rejection, he backs that up by giving us the call and cost of discipleship. Now, I think that's lovely, isn't it? Matt's an expert with words. John Douglas, a friend of mine, says, "We say so much, that means a little. But God says so little, that means so much." And Mark, an expert, an artist with words, just with two words, he outlines the absolute scene before us. My mind's riveted in these words in those days. In those days. What is Mark telling us? He's sketching in three words the days when these things happened. He says, in those days, the multitude being very great. He's telling us the conditions that surrounding it. The mounting hatred. The betrayer, perhaps, almost already made his bargain. The garden of gloom appalling, almost on Christ. Trials of indescribable sorrow lying across his path. The treachery, the mockery, the denial of the whole nation of Israel. And at last, the judgment seat with the smitings, the revilings, the bowing of the knee, and putting into that hand that will hold the scepter of universal sway, a reed and mockery. The scourging, the beating, the thorn-crowned brow. These were the things that is condensed in that phrase in those days. In those days. In spite of mounting hatred, there was popularity unparalleled. Mark says, the multitude being very glad. Indeed, I think there's a close connection between the Lord's popularity and the Pharisees' hatred. These men could not play second fiddle. They envied the peasant preacher after whom streamed the multitudes. They would have liked them to follow them, but they didn't. And I want to halt in my foot, brethren, to push that home to our hearts today. Vying for leadership has ruined almost the assemblies, and your country as well as ours. I want to say that leaders are born. And if you have not a leader, then be content to be led. That's in the natural as well as the spiritual. There was a small man in Europe raised his voice in a torrent of rage and galvanized millions behind him to march forward to a war. There was a counterpart in this country. Without bombs and planes kept at bay, a fierce enemy, and the good guidance of God, because both men were leaders. The man that played the harp in the Old Testament, David, was a born leader of men. The king's son would have left his place and allowed David to take it. The women sung about the thousands he slew. The king's daughter loved him. He went down from a home to a cave. And there were many followed his train. How? Because David was a born leader of men. David, Peter said one day, "I go a-fishing." Well, I know he was wrong, you know. But I hear a chorus of voices saying after him, "You'll come with you." And because he had the qualities of leadership, brother. That's it.
And if you haven't got it, don't try it. What is happening today? Men think they're leaders. And when they look round and see nobody following them, they make a code of rules and they bring down the male fist to make the saints toe the line and follow them. God raises leaders. And if you've not got it, you just sit on the benches and allow other folk to lead you in God's ways. I want to lift another lesson of this in those days. In those days, with the cross and judgment seat, the garden of blood like sweat, heavy upon his heart, I want to say that the Lord was thinking about other folk. Well, that's good, isn't it? There was a verse I used to hardly know what it meant, you know, but I think I know now. Timothy's going to be left with a great lot of difficulties. And almost the last word from the pen of Paul was this: take your share of suffering, Timothy. And then he adds, do the work of an evangelist and make full proof of your ministry. I think that's delightful, brethren. What is Paul saying? In the midst of your personal sorrows, and in the midst of mounting grief, and in the midst of increasing enmity, will you not forget the need of other folk out there and do the work of an evangelist? And don't forget the need of the saints in here and make full proof of your ministry. Brethren, we are sometimes so taken up with our small, circumcised sorrows that the need of others are never upon our hearts. It was the need of others that brought Christ from the throne. Says Paul, as he's trying to extract money out of the pockets of the saints, it was for your sakes he became poor. It was the thought of others, we remember, on the cross, amidst the deepest sorrow, he's almost about to enter into these lonely 3 hours of indescribable sorrow. And he says to a disciple, behold your mother. Because the woman that bore him was not going to look in his deepest grief. A sword was going to pierce her heart. But in tenderness, he's thinking of the heart of the woman that was the channel through which he had come into thinking of others. Thinking of others. I couldn't stay in it, but I love it. He was thinking of others. I want to lift another lesson from the first verse. Somebody said, I wish you would get on. I wish I had time to stay. It's hardly fair putting a big man like me into a wee corner like this. As I look at the first verse again, I want to lift another lesson. He's going to feed 4,000 folk. But before he does it, he gets the disciples, he seats them in front of him, and he says to them, I have compassion on the multitude. I think that's exceedingly sweet. If it had been me that was doing it, I would have just fed the 4,000, you know. But there's a lesson for our hearts here, brethren. Before a crumb of bread is going to be distributed, before a need's going to be met, he's going to allow his disciples to look right inside his heart and tell them the mainspring of action. Why, I love that. You know, when he cures the leper man, all we see is a hand going out. If we hadn't a divine revelation, we wouldn't know that Jesus was moved with compassion before the hand went out. Because these men are going to be servants after Christ is gone. And he's wanting them to sit there and look into his heart and to feel the throb of that in divine affection and to feel the tenderness of his compassion and feel the richness of his mercy. He says, I want you to sit there and I'll tell you what's moving me to do this, because when you carry on service after I'm gone, this is going to be what I want. Oh, brethren, I wish we could get it. I wish we could get it. They would never forget his tears. They would never forget that tear-stained cheek as they wept over Jerusalem. They would never forget it. They would never forget the lament, O Jerusalem. They would never forget this education and the wilderness as they sat. And before that miracle was performed, he said, I want to tell you what's moving me to do the miracle, the driving force behind my ministry. Because when you serve, I don't want you to preach sermons at sinners. I want you to love them. And I don't want you to hurl big chunks of text at saints. I want you to teach them in love. And I don't want you to look after sheep to get a job in the meeting, you know. He said, I want you to do it because of love to me. I have compassion in the multitude. Oh, brother, it's a sad thing when we can preach to sinners on the road to hell with a heart like stone and without a tear in our eye. And we're looking into the face of the folk that perhaps we'll never see again. Oh, for compassions of Christ. Oh, for his presence. To drink deep at his love. That we'll not simply do the thing, but we'll do it the way Christ did it. In this lovely occasion. Will you look with me at the feeding of the 4,000? Some valuable lessons before our hearts. Did you notice where the disciples break in? He says this, that the disciple says, from whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in a wilderness? Now, I want you to remember, I'm going to know the man now, so I've got a bit of paper here. Never needed paper before, but I'm sure you'll forget me. And I want you to think of what's happened in this chapter, this book up to this point. That's how I say that these things happened in this particular book. The feeding of the 4,000, for instance, wasn't before the feeding of the 5,000. Have you got that? These men had actually saw this man take the provision of a boy's peace box. If I was in Canada, I would need to say lunch pail. But the small provision of a lad, and these same disciples had saw him bless and break, and 5,000 folk, not 4,000, had been satisfied. And yet, in this chapter, we are with a multitude less. They cry in rank and belief. From whence can a man satisfy? Have you got that? They had saw the man with the unclean spirit cured. They had saw Peter's wife's mother raised from a sick bed. They had saw the leper cleansed. They had saw the man sick of the palsy going out carrying his bed. They had saw the woman with issue of blood feeling in herself that she was cured. They had saw the man roaming in the tombs now clothed and sitting in his right mind. They had saw even life given to a little maid. Have you got how we're stressing everything in order? They had saw with a man with the impediment speaking. They saw this Syrophoenician's daughter raised from sickness. They had saw the sign. They had saw the healing motion coming a great calm. And yet, in spite of seeing all that, they said, from whence can a man satisfy? What is these men saying? They're saying the multitude's too big. And the conditions is too adverse. In spite of that catalogue of miracles. And you almost hold your breath and you say, what rank unbelief. I mean, don't be too quick. Because I want to turn that to practice now. Do you know where we're expert? Seeing wrong in the brother or the sister. And they're double the wrong in Marcella and we never see it. But experts like David, you know, when Nathan told the wee story, as long as he thought he wasn't involved, you see, he could fairly come to a judgment. I could fairly come to a judgment. Turn that into yourself. There's a lovely thing here. I want you to notice the Lord's answer. He says, have ye any? How many loaves have you? I don't need to tell you I've hardly any here. You can see that. That's naked and bare, the truth. But when I had, there's a tinge of red in it. And there's a thing that goes along with red here, and that's a fair temper. And I think if I had been in the Lord's position, I would have ripped these men off.
I would have told them. I would have took them along memory's lane and catalogued all these miracles. You see, and I would have revived their memory and I would have given them a beating up, you know. But I love what the Lord did. Calmly, graciously. Amazingly, he says. How many loaves have you? How many loaves have you? Oh, brethren, would it not be great to act for the Lord? I want to tell you, we look over life. I'm more sorry often for things I say than things I didn't say. More trouble has been caused with words that never should have come than words that have come out. Have you got the scene? Have I painted it right? In spite of this cry that rent the atmosphere, how whence can I am, he says, calmly, how many loaves of me? That's good. You know, if it had only been here, you know, I would have got up in despair. I would have said, well, that's the Lord, but that's no man. But you know, there have been other men like that. Gideon didn't, you know. We own boys that come up to China. You remember that? David did it with Eliab. My, I've often pictured that. I don't really know she's speaking of the day, actually. I've often pictured that when this man, this elder brother, that had 40 days to go out and face the giant. And when a young man is going to do what he's afraid to do, he says, I know the haughtiness of your heart. Eh? What would you have said to him? You would have said, well, you have a chance yet, you can go out and have a shot at it, you know. You know what David said? Is there not a cause? Is that no good? You know, I think I would have seen ahead of. But the character of Christ is reflected in the Old Testament. I want to say that men were only important in the Old Testament as the reflected Christ that was coming. And New Testament men are only of value as they carry on the life of that man. Because the end of all ministry, you can start where you like, it's Christ. If it isn't for him, Christ, it forms nothing. He not only does that, you know, but the amazing thing to me is going to use them there. You know, I would have suspended them Sunday. I would have said, you'll never be any use in service. Folk that speak that will be of no good for me. But the amazing thing, these very disciples of unbelief is going to use their very hands to distribute the bread. That's good. Right, I'll need to leave that. It'd be nice. Will I point out to students? Well, but some of them here, I suppose. That word set before is the same word as used when the Acts Paul opened and alleged. The same word as commended. What exactly said before? That is what these disciples did with bread. Are you listening? Teachers and preachers doesn't really work. I won't have to get into your heart. These disciples simply took for the Lord and went to the multitude and placed it before. They neither gave less nor more. Do that in your preaching, young man. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Simply deliver what you've got, what you've received, and the Lord will bless you. Now, I would like to tarry a wee bit, but I want 2 minutes in this miracle. And you say why? Because it's one of the 2 miracles that's found exclusively in Mark. And that makes it most interesting. And you say, where's the other one? Well, for nothing, I'll tell you. It's found in the end of the 7th chapter, and it's the cure of the man with the impediment. Now that's double measure for you. And there are principles in these 2 miracles that should apply to every servant. Particularly, I think that's a setting. For instance, in the first one, it's a man with an impediment. And it says this, that the Lord put his finger in his ear and he touched his tongue. And in this miracle, it says that he touched his eyes. He put his hands upon his eyes. And somebody said, what on earth are you going to do with that? Well, what I'm going to get out of that is lying on the very surface. The Lord touched the bit that was affected. Do you know that's the difference between a sermon and a word? Do you know that's the difference between a sermon and a message?
Somebody said a sermon you get up the way, a message you get down the way.
Filing through your old books till you get something that you think you're good at and giving it out, and it never touches the need of the folk in front of you.
I want to say that Paul never mixed his medicines. He didn't write what he read to the Corinthians and wrote to the Thessalonians, you know.
No. It's a word in season we're wanting, you know. It's a word out of his mouth. It's something that affects the bit that's needing to be sorted.
Simple thing, isn't it?
Another thing I get from it, that he put the man, his fingers on the man's ears, and then he touched the man's tongue. For the simple reason, if the man hadn't listened right, he'd have spoke right. When he's rebuking the wind, calming the storm, he rebukes the wind first, and the storm, and the waves. How? Because if there'd been no wind, there'd be no waves. Brethren, we're forever scraping the surface. When God deals with a man, he goes to the source. Gets back to the beginning of life.
Lovely if we could have developed that, wouldn't it?
When I come to this one, there's two words I want you to fix your mind. And I sometimes use alliterations, you know. No, nothing. But there's two here without making them. And I'm looking at the word bring. And I'm looking at the word besought. I remember a man in a meeting I was at. He liked a wee shot in the platform. And really, it was an endurance test listening to him. But I'll tell you what him and his wife could do. They could fill a whole seat in the air. He couldn't preach, but why, he could bang. You know, I hate Ziba when he deceived my fellows. I hate him. But I want to say I love him when I see him going down to fetch him. You see, he couldn't feed him, but he could fetch him, you know. You got that? I love to see four men, and they're carrying a palsy man. They couldn't cure him, you know.
Ah, but they could carry him to where he was.
I love to see them going out when the great supper spread, to call them in. To call them in. You know, they couldn't spread the table, but they could bring them to the place where they could get it. Oh, brother. I'm telling you, this is a job we all could do, you know. Gospel meetings would be much better. The folk that felt they couldn't preach, that perhaps you could bring. Lovely to have the old dad. No finish, you know. I mean, lovely just to have in a wee while. And then it's no great to think there's that one here, not only bring, but besought. Oh, that's sweet, isn't it? You know, everybody that I've heard could preach. I'll tell you what they couldn't do often. In fact, I remember a man giving a lecture in prayer. It was worth perfect. And he was never known in 10 years to pray in his own meeting. Could fairly preach, you know. He had the thing off pat. But he hadn't learned to beseech. Now, this is sweet. You go through the New Testament at your leisure. Jairus about his servant, his daughter, centurion about his servant, and Martha and Mary about their brother. Beseeching. 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 Just telling the Lord about it. Could I bring in a wee touch for folk that usually get abused? And when I read about the feeding of the 5,000, I read this, that he sat them doing in green grass. Green grass. Could I give a wee encouragement to the man that the folk that look after the hall, you know? I was a hall keeper, you know, for a wee while. And I think it's the most ungrateful, unthankful job you could get. It's either too cold or too hot, too drafty or too warm. And you would hardly, they would need to sit in the pipes to be satisfied. But the Lord takes note of folk that create suitable conditions for folk to sin. That's how he makes us sit in green grass. He leads us by the still waters. Now, you got that? Folk that bring, folk that pray, folk that creates conditions, and then folk that can preach. We need them too, you know. The autumn. Would you allow me to see something else now? And this miracle, the Lord not only puts his hands once, but he puts his hands twice. And you see, you said you felt this miracle, and the other miracle was to do with servants. So it is, you know. The Lord will not leave that man until he's completely cured. That is, he'll not get him to see a thing half and then put his name in the book and give a report at the Easter meetings. You got that? There are more names in the book than of men in the book of life in heaven. No, he'll not stop halfway. That's what I want to add. He'll not leave that until he sees clearly. Now, the Lord always does that. If it's creation, he finished over. If it's the sheep, he searches until he finds it. If it's creation, he's not going to fail until he has set judgment in the earth. We're living in days when far too many young folk take up work and leave it half done. I'm appealing to you that the Lord finish the task. As I know a lovely word to so clearly. I worked in the farm during the war, because I was a conscientious objector to military service. Now, if you're a military man, don't shoot me. That was my conscience. And during that time, I read through Mark's Gospel. And I discovered this. If I wanted parables, I went to Matthew for them. But if I wanted miracles, I went to Mark for them. And Mark always added a small word. If I was in Scotland, I would say a wee word. A small word after almost every miracle. And he adds that word here. He says he saw, and that would be great now. But it says he saw clearly. That's good, isn't it? When it's the man with the impediment, it says he spake. And I know that would have been great. But it says he spoke plainly. When it's the man with the word at hand, if the medical profession had given him a long arm and a short one, they would have thought they performed the miracle. But when the Lord was finished with him, it was whole, and marked delightfully as whole as the other. Whole as the other. Because the perfect physician was at work. If it was a woman, 12 years, an issue of blood, what a weakening thing, madam. It says she felt in herself that she was cured. And if it was Peter's wife's mother, Peter's wife's mother, the mother-in-law that we heard about last night. Peter seemed to get on well with her. He wasn't the one that when she was going to die and if he was all right in the will, you know. He was really concerned to get her back on her feet, not in a coffin. And he tells the Lord about her. And when the Lord cures her, up she gets. And it says this. Are you listening? Are you listening? She didn't go for a fortnight at the coast, she got her energies back, you know. And our family didn't say, Mother, you've had a rough time, and you sit there and we'll do the work. It says she arose and ministered to them. How? Because that's... I've really been too long. I hope not too long. I'm always asking forgiveness. I don't very often ask it from Irishmen. Because I doubt whether I'll get it or not.